Good morning, and greetings to each of you in Jesus' precious name. This morning we were driving to church this morning, and I thought about how the weather this morning complemented what we are here worshiping, what we're doing this morning. As the other week, 2 weeks ago, it was the resurrection morning, and it was beautiful, crystal clear blue skies. And this morning, as we were driving, it was just mellow and soft and just kind of sobering to think about Jesus' death and what he's done for us in our lives. And we focus on his work this morning. Feels a little bit backwards to preach the sermon 2 weeks ago on Easter. Now we're looking at his death. But I think it's good to stop. And it's been very inspiring to me as I studied for this message of what he's done the cost, the weight of sin, what needed to be done that we could have a restored relationship with God. So this morning I'd like to look at Christ's words on the cross. It's the title of my message this morning. I never was beside someone that was dying. Never experienced that. But I've talked to people that had that experience. Remember listening to grandparents talk about what it was like to be beside their family member or their parents, and to be there. And a lot of time, the words that someone said right before their death is a very meaningful, they're more of a sober, they're words that we don't just go around telling a lot of people. We don't really talk about it other than to our friends and people that are near to us. And when we do talk about them, they're more of, you talk about them in a reverent way, of what happened right before a close, a loved one died, and it seems like usually they're words of encouragement to the family that's still living. In the Old Testament, we think of Jacob whenever he was on his deathbed. He gave blessing and distributed out the blessing to his sons. And it would have changed their lives very, very much if the blessing that was distributed there. We don't really have that so much in the New Testament. But those words are very important. It affected those boys as we continue on the different tribes, and it affected generations. But this morning I'd like to just go through the words of Jesus on the cross. There's seven different ones. I'd like to just turn to Luke 23 for the first one. Not all of them are in Luke. We're going to switch back and forth a little bit between the different Gospels. But they are important. And we can get a little insight of, if we think of Jesus hanging on the cross and his suffering, what he was enduring in the time, at the same time that he was speaking these words. They weren't words that he just easily spoke. They were words that probably come out kind of slowly as he struggled to breathe and in the pain of his suffering there. So, Luke 23, verse 34, it says, "Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots." Just stood out to me there that he didn't say, "Father, I forgive you." He said, but he interceded for these men and asked that God would forgive them for what they were doing. Maybe I'm pulling a little more out of that than what I should, but as we think of us forgiving, there can be a bit of selfishness in our heart as we tell someone, I forgive you. Doesn't have to be that way, but there can be, as we think, well, I have the opportunity, I can forgive you. Yeah, you did this to me, but I choose to forgive it. Or we can go around and talk to people and say, well, so-and-so did something to me and hurt me, but I choose, it's in the past, I choose to forgive. But here, Jesus said, he did not say, I forgive them. He said, Father, forgive them. And he interceded for them to God. and it was very humbling. You know, he could have, like Keith was saying, he could have said many words of rebuke to these men that were crucifying him, to the leaders that were there. You know, words that he had just laid aside his majesty and was fastened to the cross. And he had just got done serving them, caring for them. You know, they were nailing the feet that had carried out the gospel of peace. They were mocking a man who had loved to bless them, cared for them. They pierced the hands that had broke the bread, that had fed them. So many good things that Christ had done. He hadn't did a single thing wrong, single word of hatred, he had cared and he had blessed and blessed and blessed the people that are around him. And here they are crucifying him. And he didn't say a thing against them, but instead he interceded for them. Just strikes me at the power, the love of Christ, even whenever all humanity had turned against him. And here he is interceding to the Father. And later, as God answered Jesus' prayer there by providing salvation to the world, and he even provided salvation to the men that were there crucifying him, God answered that prayer and provided an opportunity that they could be forgiven if they chose to accept the blood of Christ. Next, down in verse 43, Luke 23, next couple verses down, verse 42, it says, And he said unto Jesus, Lord, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, today thou shalt be with me in paradise. We have the penitent thief there crying out, Lord, Lord, remember me. And I think that had to have been a tremendous inspiration to Christ as he was there hanging on the cross. I don't know what all was going through Christ's mind. It does say right ahead of that, on verse 39, it says they railed on him. So we have that happening. And they say, Christ, if thou be Christ, you save yourself. We have that happening, and I would expect, I fully believe that there was thoughts going through his mind as he was, of the evening before, the mob screaming, crucify him, or actually early that morning, crucify him, crucify him. It's probably still ringing in his ears, and these men, the people that were railing on him, and here we have beside of him, on the cross beside of him, this thief, says, remember me, and when thou comest into thy kingdom. Sure, it kind of jerked his thoughts back to what was his purpose here. What was, there is a kingdom ahead of him. There is a paradise, and he says, today thou shalt be with me in paradise. And just to visualize I can't even imagine what was the opposite of what he was there on Golgotha, crucified, the evil that was around him, evil that he was experiencing, and to suddenly get a glimpse and a thought of what paradise was. He was going to be there today, at the end of the day. That's where what he was going to experience. It had to be an inspiration to him, as the thief reminded him of the kingdom that was ahead, the future that he got is going to be experienced because he was submitting himself to what God had asked him to do. The next one, I'd like to look at John 19, verse 26. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and his the disciples standing by, whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son. Then said he to the disciple, Behold thy mother. And from that hour the disciple took her unto his own home. Jesus was hanging on the cross, and he still had the compassion and still looked out for the needs of the other people around him. As there his mother was, I'm sure the last thing in her mind right then was her future. She was thinking about her son hanging on the cross and the suffering that he was enduring. The last thing, I'm sure, the last thing she was thinking about was who was going to take care of her. But Jesus thought about it, that she was going to need someone to provide for her. Evidently, Joseph must have had passed away up to this point, and so she, or otherwise he wouldn't have needed to find someone to care for her. But Jesus thinks about others, thinks about those that are near him, and he says he provides a plan that she could be taken care of. It's interesting to me that right there is where we have that his followers, his disciples, were closer to him than his family. Think of his brothers that at that point had not believed, and they weren't there, but here was John, a disciple that loved him, and he chose to have John take care of his mother because he could trust John, because John was following after him, and he knew that he had the heart of John and that John would care for his mother. I can see all kinds of potential that there could have been a conflict in the family with his mother going to someone else's house to be taken care of instead of his own family. As Jesus was the oldest son, he chose John instead of his half-brothers. I don't know what, I mean, we have later James becoming a Christian, and I don't know if later his mother went to live with James then or not, but it says from that hour the disciple took her into his own home and cared for her. just shows us the importance of our spiritual relationship with Christ brings us into the family of Jesus. Next, I'd like to look at Matthew 27. Matthew 27, verse 46, we have the words, about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? That is actually a quote out of Psalms, and if you turn back to Psalms 22, these words, and it's written exact word for word. Luke or Matthew wrote them here. Psalm 22, verse 1. And I think I'd like to just read the first part of this psalm because it portrays a lot. It details out a lot of what Christ experienced on the cross, just like we looked at Isaiah 53 this morning. Psalm 22, it's amazing how it portrays Christ and the sufferings that he bore on the cross. In verse 1 it says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me and from the words of my roaring? O my God, I cry in the daytime, but thou hearest not, in the night season, and am not silent. But thou art holy, thou that inhabiteth the praises of Israel. Our fathers trusted in thee. They trusted, and thou didst deliver them. They cried unto thee, and were delivered. They trusted in thee, and were not confounded. But I am a worm, and no man, a reproach of men, and despised of the people. All they that see me laugh me to scorn. They shoot out the lip. They shake the head, saying, he trusted on the Lord that he would deliver him. Let him deliver him, seeing he delighteth in him. But thou art he that took me out of the womb. Thou didst make me hope when I was upon my mother's breast. I was cast upon thee from the womb. Thou art my God from my mother's belly. Be not far from me, for trouble is near, for there is none to help. Many bulls have compassed me. The strong bull Bashan hath beset me round. They gaped upon me with their mouth as a ravening and a roaring lion. I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted in the midst of my bowels. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue cleaveth to my jaws. Thou hast brought me into the dust of death. For dogs have compassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. I may tell of my bones. They look and stare upon me. They part my garments among them and cast lots upon my vesture. But be thou not far from me, O Lord, O my strength. Haste thee to help me. Deliver my soul from the sword, my darling from the power of the dog. Save me from the lion's mouth, and for thou hast heard me from the horns of the unicorns. And I brought it out in the last, I think it was in my last sermon, talked about how the one of the more painful things that Christ suffered, I'm sure, was the feeling of being deserted from Christ, from his Father, as that weight of sin and guilt and shame, like that, as he took that, enveloped that on him, the feeling that God had forsaken him had to be phenomenal. And for all his life that he and God were, he and his Father were one. He talks about it many times, how that they're one together. And here it felt like to him that God had just turned his back and had forsaken him. But in that feeling, in that pain, he still did not, his agony did not overcome his faith. And we see him still remaining, staying right there, remaining faithful to God. And later on he says, I commit my spirit into your hands. Remaining faithful to God, even though he felt forsaken, he felt like he was suffering this. God had just turned his face. If we turn to John 19, verse 28, we have the fifth saying of Jesus. John, verse 19, verse 28. So in John, this would have been, they would have wrote this right after Christ finding, taking care of his mother. But here in verse 28, it said, after this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, saith, I thirst. And at first I looked at that, it's like, well, that's pretty straightforward. He was hanging in the sun. There was no shade on top of the mount, on top of that hill there, all day. Of course, he was thirsty. You're hanging in the sun, and all the suffering that he bore, the sweat, his body. He had to have been thirsty. And as I was studying this, it was actually very important that this is here, because early in the church, one of the first heresies in the church was the idea that Jesus was not fully flesh and blood, that he did not experience hunger and thirst and pleasure and pain like mankind. And it taught that he came as a man, but he wasn't fully a man. He was mostly God, and so that he did not experience the suffering of the crucifixion. But then also, they they had that mentality, the thought that it's just a divine show. It made no sense why Jesus would cry out and say, "I thirst," because this was a human sensation and one that no divine being would have. But this is written here, and I think it's just to show and to prove to us that Christ was fully a man, and that he was fully human, and he had come, was flesh and blood just like the rest of us. He ate, and he drank, and he slept. We have written that he wept, and he suffered, and he died. He did not escape the crucifixion by some divine loophole. It wasn't like his body was there there suffering, but he could escape from it. He was fully in his body, experiencing the thirst, the pains, the suffering of any human would experience. And I remember when I was a boy, pretty young, reading through this story, and at first you think that's just an awful. There's got to be another way that could have been. And then later, the thought is like, well, maybe, you know, as Christ was God, somehow he didn't have to feel that. But this is written to us to realize that he was not somehow removed from this experience. He can fully relate to the depths of humans in our lives. Jesus was the very incarnation of God, and as he went to the cross, it's vital to our faith that teaches that Jesus enters into the very depths of human life. To believe that Christ somehow was not on the cross is to believe that there is something about humanity that Jesus does not enter into, and that somehow Christ doesn't fully understand what we're going through. But this is very much denied all through Scripture that Christ was not human. It's again brought out that Christ was man, and he experiences the sufferings and the struggles that we face. Even he understands the guilt and the shame that sin brings. It's hard to fathom what that Christ, being perfect, could understand, could experience that. But he did, and it was right here on the cross that the shame and the suffering and guilt that we experience whenever we have sin in our life that removes us from a relationship with God. The sixth point I'd like to look at is John 19:30. So if just go down two verses there. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, he said, "It is finished." And he bowed his head and he gave up the ghost. If you look up the word "finish," "finish" there means paid in full. And there's three things that was finished whenever he said that. The first thing was the prophecies of Scripture had been completed. And as we look at many times in Christ's life, he said it was written, or just refers back to the prophecies of the Word. And you know, as sometimes I think it's like, well, how in the world did Christ keep track of all the things that were prophesied that was going to happen? But then just remember that Christ was the one that inspired David to write that psalm that portrayed Christ on the cross and his sufferings. And so it was Christ that was had inspired that. He would know exactly what was prophesied that was going to happen. And whenever each thing had been fulfilled, he said, "That's finished." Now there is some things that were going to come later as in his resurrection. But up to that point, his work was finished. So the prophecies were completed. Next point is the judgment of sin was complete. And as we think back of the cost, the price of sin, look back at the Garden of Eden, when God covered Adam and Eve with coats of skin, you know, the animal had to die. Something had to die for the price of sin. And this is what Jesus, he said, is finished. He had to die, and it was done. That price, his death, that could pay for the sin. Because of sin, a price needed to be paid to satisfy the judgment of sin that required judgment of sin. There had to be something that covered, there had to be a death because of the sin. When Jesus was on the cross, God placed him on, placed on him the sins of the world, and by doing that, it fulfilled the requirement of the judgment. It had to be something, had to be a death for sin. In Isaiah 53, we read that there we know that our iniquity was laid on Jesus, and he became once and for all the sacrifice needed to meet the demands of God's judgment, God's justice. So we have the death. And then next, we have the forgiveness of sin that was available through the shedding of his blood. the law required that, and well, if you look at Hebrews 9, we see that the law required that everything needed to be cleansed with blood. And without the shedding of blood, there was no forgiveness. And by Jesus dying on the cross and shedding his blood, he provided forgiveness of sin. And because of the judgment of sin, and the payment of sin the judgment of sin is death, and the payment of sin with his blood, both were complete, and Jesus could say, "It is finished." And the last point I'd like to look at is back to Luke 23. Luke 23, verse 46. And when Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." And having said thus, he gave up the ghost. In John 10, verse 14, it says, "I am a good shepherd, and know my sheep, and have known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, and even so I the Father. I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold. For them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of the Father." just, again, a reminder of how Christ gave his life. There was no person that took his life away from him. He had control. He had the power of the Father to give his life. That's something we don't have that ability to just choose to give our lives. I know some people that wish they had that ability, but we don't have that, and it would be wrong for us to take our lives without it being in God's timing. If God chooses whenever when our time is up. But Christ, because he was God, he knew that his time was completed, it was finished, and that it was time that he could give his life. And he bowed his head and he said, "I commend my hand, commend the Father into thy hands. I commend my spirit." And he bowed his head and gave up the ghost. So, in conclusion, as we look at Jesus' words, just reminded of the words of John. John 1 says, "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." As we think of the words of Christ as he suffered on the cross, the struggled to speak, and we just think of his glory and the only begotten one of the Father.